What's up, guys? It's the Faruqi Brothers back with another video. And today for you guys, we're going to be talking about our favorite film series of all time, or rather favorite franchise of all time. So it's going to be a little more conversational, a little more fun. We're going to keep it chill. And we'll all kind of give our favorite thoughts, favorite film franchise, favorite films of all time. We're going to touch all of it. We might even do a little bit of our least favorite films of all time at the end, right? So let's get started right away. And maybe I'll kick us off. So when I think about favorite film franchise, the first thing I think about are big blockbusters, things that have existed for over a decade or more on film in different capacities. So when someone mentions this to me, the first thing that comes to my mind is, okay, are we talking like Lord of the Rings? Are we talking the Harry Potter franchise? Are we talking the Star Wars 9 films? Are we talking about the DCEU? Are we talking about the MCU? So it's hard to kind of pick out your favorites when you look at all of that. But the first thing that I would pick would be probably Lord of the Rings. And the reason I picked that is that those three films, even though they're a little old, and that's the only con, because I would have put it up against probably Harry Potter, because Harry Potter had a longer run where it's consistent. But for Lord of the Rings, when I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking, okay, you have three films, but each of them are so good that they stand the test of time, right? And then every film franchise has a pros and cons, but I count the Hobbit franchise part of Lord of the Rings, so then you had three movies that weren't as good, right? So it's hard to think about, but well, let's get to the answer as we go along the room. So, like, and you guys can jump in. Like, when someone asks you what's your favorite film franchise, where does your mind go?
You know, honestly, like, I know we obviously, since we saw the same films, we grew up with the same content. For me as well, I think Lord of the Rings is just on every single level since we were kids till now as adults. You grasp something new from it every time you watch it, and you just so get so invested into the world. I know, like you said, Harry Potter is a bigger journey, so to speak, because of how long it went and how consistently good it was, which for 8 films, like, that's a huge, huge, it's so commendable to them, because you see other big franchises like MCU and things like that where, you know, more than half of it is pretty lackluster, if we're being honest. So for Harry Potter to accomplish what they did in that stretch, I think it's really great, and obviously has it as one of the highest or one of the best fantasy film sagas, film trilogy, film franchises of all time. But in terms of just the consistency of it, the tight nature of it, I think Lord of the Rings is just perfect on every single level. I mean, for its time, even it was the CGI, everything was so advanced, and it still stands to the day. The way the shots are structured, the way the score is, it's all pretty much masterwork and masterpiece of a film. And I think that resonates till today. And for me personally, I'd say in terms of a franchise or a trilogy in film, Lord of the Rings will always be number one.
So I think that Harry Potter, one of the amazing things about Harry Potter is that because there was such a long run, like 8 films, for 8 films to be consistently great, I think that makes it probably like easily one of the best, obviously, but it could even be the best, partly because, and I love Lord of the Rings too, I just think that like The Hobbit is not as good as the original Lord of the Rings. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're still great movies, but they're not, you know, like Harry Potter, one after the other, like just as a linear thing, like 8 movies straight, 7, but yeah, 8 straight were really good. So I would say Harry Potter, and then the storylines and the acting and all that stuff, the casting, everything was basically perfect. So for me, I would say Harry Potter.
But Umar, you mentioned that the Hobbit, you know, kind of lowered the value of the Lord of the Rings franchise as a whole. Does the Fantastic Beasts franchise also do that for Harry Potter? Because it is technically kind of like a prequel series. Does that ruin Harry Potter at all for you? Or in your mind, do you really keep them separate?
If anything, it makes it better. It's Fantastic Beasts. What are you talking about?
He has a point.
Nah, it doesn't. I don't know. It depends. It depends on how you would, like, I would consider, yeah, it's part of the Harry Potter world. Like, if we were to talk MCU, right? There's like mini, like, franchises within it, right? So the Captain America stuff compared to Iron Man stuff, it's the same thing. It's all MCU, but you could kind of compare and contrast. But as you would still, you would still look at like the best of the best and go from there. But yeah, you're right. One can make that point that Fantastic Beasts is, compared to Harry Potter, compared to the first, you know, the main stuff, it's not as good. So you could make that point. It's just like DC. No one's going to choose the DCU now because Justice was garbage. So.
Samir, what is your favorite film franchise?
See, the way I look at it is I think more about how the appeal of how the universe is constructed within the saga. So my favorite has to be Star Wars, even though when you think about it, all the movies are pretty subpar. But the way the universe is constructed, the soundtrack and everything, I think I like Star Wars the most. The question I have, though, is would you consider Solo part of the Star Wars franchise?
I would say any, just like if you consider things like Fantastic Beasts or The Hobbit part of their franchises, I would say Solo and Rogue One are part of the Star Wars franchise. They're not part of the main Skywalker saga, but they're part of the Star Wars franchise. So it's interesting that you mentioned Star Wars because this whole idea of the sum of the parts equaling the individuals, right? Do the individuals equal the sum? Because I agree with Samir that individually, when you go Star Wars movie to movie, it's not like more good than bad. It's actually more mid than good. Because, I mean, we'll do a quick rundown. Episode 1, Episode 2, I felt like are subpar. Episode 3 is great. Episode 4 is good. 5 is great. 6 is subpar. 7 is good. 8 is good. And then 9 is good. I feel like they're all good. None of them are horrible. None of them are great. They're kind of just mid, right? But none of it's like, you know, when you go through Harry Potter, you can say Harry Potter 1 and 2, both good. Harry Potter 3, 4, 5, great. Harry Potter 6, good. And then Harry Potter 7 and 7 part 2, great. Or 7 part 1, I would say is mid, but 7 part 2, great, right? So, and then Lord of the Rings, I would say 3, masterpiece, and then 3, mid. So it's kind of weird because you don't get that perfection. The closest you get to consistently great, I would say Umar's point was right, that Harry Potter is the closest thing to being consistently great where there's no bad movie. You know, I can't look at the Harry Potter franchise outside of Fantastic Beasts. I can't look at the mainline films and be like, oh, yeah, this movie was bad. But for Star Wars, I can say it. For Lord of the Rings, I can say it. Not for Lord of the Rings, but I mean the Middle-Earth franchise with like Hobbit included. So it's one of those weird things, right? So it's one of those weird things.
I think Harry Potter is also the most rewatchable. You could just literally... anyone can just put it on and watch it, any of the movies and just, because they're short enough, they're relaxed, like you can just, you know, like they're not, like to go, like Lord of the Rings is a journey, you know what I mean? Like Lord of the Rings, you got to sit and like, even like the first time watching it, you have to kind of like let it play out. And it's amazing. And I think objectively, it's the best. It's the best franchise. Like just those three, if you take out The Hobbit out of the equation, those three movies are better than any other three movies, including The Dark Knight, by the way. The Dark Knight trilogy, amazing as well. But I don't know. There's something about Lord of the Rings that the others just don't have. It's probably the world-building thing. It goes back to what Samir was saying, that like the actual world that was built was just amazing. Like and the amount of detail, having their own languages and stuff. Like, it's crazy, crazy stuff compared to, you know, the other franchises. So, so Lord of the Rings, obviously, I think everyone would agree is a different level.
And I think, I agree with Samir. He said something good about Star Wars, is that, and like Omar said, like the world building thing, because what Star Wars has that Harry Potter and even Lord of the Rings kind of don't is that lore behind it. Like, you get so invested in the theories and the what ifs with Star Wars that you don't do with the other films, and all the adjacent pieces like The Mandalorian and Clone Wars, they just help you get more invested, more excited about the world of Star Wars that the other franchises actually don't have. Maybe it's because the films don't provide as much as fans want in terms of the totality of the world and the theories and the things people want to see come back from past films or past books that people love also reading for Star Wars. So I think that's the one thing Star Wars has an edge over Lord of the Rings or even Harry Potter is in terms of just their world and all like the connective tissue they have outside of the main films. I know Lord of the Rings are finally going to get a series for that. Let's see how that's going to go. But for now, in terms of just aside from the main films and the connective tissue that they add with Mandalorian, with Clone Wars, and et cetera, I think Star Wars is on top.
I think with Star Wars, the other point is that it's generational, because every 10 years you get three films rather than coming at one shot like Harry Potter did or Lord of the Rings. Also, they film all three movies at the same time. For Star Wars, you get three movies that came out in the 70s and 80s. Then you get three movies that came out in the 2000s. Then you get three movies that came out in the 2010s. So every 10 years you get a different trilogy. So it invites different fans, where people double our age group also know Star Wars, but then people 10 years younger than us also know Star Wars. Whereas Lord of the Rings, if I ask someone 10 years younger than me, chances are they might not have even seen it, right? And with Harry Potter, again, there's a chance they might not have seen it. But for Star Wars, even if you haven't seen the prequels or the originals, you know someone. You're either connecting with Rey, or you're connecting with Kylo Ren, if you're in the modern generation, or if you grew up like us, you're thinking about Obi-Wan, you're thinking about Anakin Skywalker. And then if you're in our parents' generation, you're thinking about Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, and Leia, right? So everyone has something with Star Wars, which makes it very graspable. But I think I want to jump off something Umar said, because we touched on the Dark Knight trilogy, and it's funny because for a channel called Comic Book Debate, none of us picked anything to do with superheroes as our favorite film franchise, despite there being so many superhero films of late. So let's take a few minutes to talk about superhero franchises, because there's some good ones, right? Because it's not just DCU and MCU. You got to look at the Dark Knight trilogy. You got to look at the original Spider-Man trilogy. You got to look at the Christopher Reeve films. You got to look at the X-Men films. Everything has a little place. And of course, and there's the mainline DCEU, mainline MCU, even the Sony stuff, right? So where does that fit in? Like for Umar, I'll touch back with you. Like where for you does the Dark Knight or the Spider-Man trilogy with Toby fit into like this wider nexus of Star Wars, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings? Like how do you value them compared to each other?
I would say that, look, from a filmmaking standpoint, obviously the Dark Knight, like you could make the case that as a singular film is better than all the other singular films. So you can make the case that, look, like that one run was so good that, and I think the Dark Knight Rises, like I think that's an underrated movie. Like that movie is pretty good too. Like I think the Dark Knight was so good that people kind of wanted something along the same lines. But so the Dark Knight and the Sony stuff and the other, it fits, but I think it depends on what you like. It depends on your taste. So like some people like myself, we want to see a journey. Like we want to see the characters go on a long journey, right? And you can make the case that they do it in everything, right? But at the same time, like for example, the Spider-Man stuff, right? The Spider-Man stuff, the Homecoming stuff, the more the MCU Spider-Man stuff, there isn't a journey. Like it's not really like, unless you take Civil War and Avengers, right? You just keep them in one thing. There isn't really a journey the guy goes on. He's the same crap. Tony Stark does something to somebody, and then the villain becomes a villain because of Tony Stark. It had nothing to do with Spider-Man. So it's just not, I don't know. Like, it depends what we're comparing. It depends on what we're talking about. There's too many variables, right? I think that same with the DCEU. Like, it depends on how you're going to view it. Like, Man of Steel and Batman Superman, of course, amazing films. But then if you're going to put the theatrical cut of Justice League, then we're going to have a very different... If you're going to put them as a whole, that's going to bog it down. While if you just take Man of Steel and Batman Superman, it's actually one of the best. You can compare, in my opinion, you can actually compare it easily to the Dark Knight trilogy. So it just depends.
And then for you, Samir, you know, I always wondered, you know, like for you, where does Narnia fit in all this?
The thing is, there's a bunch of other, you know, fantasy or sci-fi sagas that we haven't mentioned, like Narnia, The Hunger Games, the Divergent series, Percy Jackson, which none of us have ever seen, I think. But yeah, Narnia's pretty good. I'm not going to lie. Have you even seen it, Charles?
Just pretty good. I mean, it's okay. I mean, for Narnia, I was never into it. And I think me and Samir had this conversation a few days ago about Narnia versus kind of what we grew up with, because we have like a couple of years apart from each other. So like when you grew up with Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, and then Narnia comes in the middle, like it feels like a B-tier movie. You know, I'm not knocking. If you love Narnia, you love it. And there's parts of it that I actually like as well. But for me, it never actually kind of fit with the rest of it. You know, it's kind of like when you're a kid watching Barney the Dinosaur and then someone switches the channel to Dudley the Dragon. You know, how are you going to handle that, you know, for Umar and Samir, their favorite?
Narnia is not my favorite. Narnia is not my favorite. Narnia is like, I don't know how to put it, but Narnia is like the theatrical of Justice League. compared to what was happening. Man of Steel, Batman, Superman, Lord of the Rings, you know? Man of Lord of the Rings, the third one was like, yeah, like, that's basically what it is.
All right, so this is a good transition because we kind of talked about our favorites, but let's talk about the movies that kind of don't do it for us, you know? Our worst liked movies, you know? Maybe we can do either worst like franchise or worst like movie. But I'm not going first because I want to listen to what you guys say. So someone can go first.
Samir, why don't
what is your worst that? Movie? Latin?
What?
Samir, why don't you start us off?
What is the worst movie you ever saw, Samir? You're like, oh, this movie ain't it.
It has to be The Fixer, bro. You've seen The Fixer, man? Have you ever heard of this movie?
Dude, you mean a five-carat film production?
Of course. AJ Cross, man. Where's the Oscar? But the movie itself, I don't know about that. Or why don't you give your
The worst franchises.
Or worst movie.
Worst movie.
We just say this wasn't it. I mean, we just watched Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald 2 years ago.
Yeah. You could put that in there. I gave it a 4 though.
You love that movie coming out.
I mean, John, why don't you start us off?
For me, it's honestly very easy. I don't know, guys, how I've mentioned it. So, for my franchise, honestly, the worst film franchise I've ever seen is Ice Age. Like,
How dare you?
It puts me to sleep faster than Ice Age. So, like, if you want to cure insomnia, don't go to the doctor. Don't take any pills. Put on any Ice Age film. You'll knock out flat in 5 seconds.
I think it's great.
It wasn't that bad.
It is literally the worst.
I think you love Ice Age, bro.
You know, Samir, that explains a lot of
any of them. Pick any worst one. The worst Ice Age movie is better than Justice League.
I wouldn't go that far. Ice Age is so bad.
Ice Age is great. I don't know what you're talking about.
But in terms of singular.
First Ice Age is freaking. It's a classic.
The first one is a classic, yeah.
No, it isn't. It's so bad.
It's like Madagascar. Madagascar is better, but it's not like in the same world.
Don't even put that in the same sentence as Madagascar. Madagascar has good writing. Madagascar and Shrek 1, they're in their own little circle. All right, so let me get
Nah, bro. All
right, but for the singular worst film, it's actually a tie between two because they're both so egregious that I can't pick between them. So the first one is Batman and Harley Quinn. I know for superhero fans, if you watch that garbage, you know, it's like you can't get that time of your life back, and I feel sorry for you as well. But for this one, I know Strong Samir, this is like a cult classic for them. They live in that. And this is Cat in the Hat, the live action.
Oh man.
The worst film I've ever seen. I think live action, Cat in the Hat's the worst. In animation, Batman Harley Quinn's the worst, and they're both irredeemable.
The Cat in the Hat has like amazing writing, bro. What are you talking about?
I want to put my
you canine hat. American.
The thing about Cat in the Hat is that one, like Samir said, impeccable writing. Like the script is like hilarious. Number two, surprising the cinematography, the set design, like it's really unique. You know,
the set design is the only thing going for it. Otherwise, it's just unwatchable.
And the performance by Mike Myers as a cat is really good. Why are we having this conversation? But
well, you love Doolittle, Shaw, so why don't you talk a little bit about that?
So, I mean, Samir already guessed that the worst movie of recent history that I saw was Dr. Doolittle, right? Or just called Doolittle.
Are you sure? There's another movie you're forgetting called Gemini Man. I think I better remind you of that.
No. Gemini Man actually has some redeeming qualities. So, it wasn't this, this was in it.
And?
I'm just going to say the worst movie is Doolittle of recent memory. I'm like, I was just going to sit through it. Like, I was sleeping, you know? Like, Zion wanted to get out to get popcorn or something in the middle of the movie. When he came back, he missed nothing.
Actually, I went to the most vital scene at the end, and honestly, I missed literally nothing. If anything, I missed that, so I didn't have to sit through it.
He literally whispered to me, he's like, oh, yeah, what happens? Wonder, what's your worst movie?
I'm going to piss off Shaw. Superman Returns is the worst movie ever. It's called what it is.
It wasn't
that. I just watched that yesterday.
Boomer, you loved that movie when it came out, so stop lying.
I loved one scene in that, and that one scene, let me just, for the audience, is where Superman saves a plane. And that scene is actually still one of the best Superman scenes ever. Call it what it is. But the movie sucks. The movie's garbage.
You know, speaking of Superman, I think Superman 3 is really bad. The third Christopher movie, Superman movie, is really bad.
Superman 3, though, anybody who watched it, Shraz, you know this, the first half and the second half are completely different movies, though. Like,
it's overall irredeemable. I think, you know, as more a joke choice, I think Spider-Man Far From Home is really bad. Not the worst movie ever. Ant-Man 2 was really bad. Like, that's a one-star movie.
Well, Far From Home is the worst Spider-Man movie. So,
like, yeah, but Ant-Man 2 is worse than Far From Home.
Yeah, I think.
Also, I'm sorry to do it to y'all, but Birds of Prey is pretty bad too.
No,
not even close to that. Not Ant-Man 2 level.
Not even close.
Birds of Prey is better than Suicide
Squad. That's not Ant-Man 2 level.
Birds of Prey is better than Suicide Squad.
When me and Shraz went to watch Ant-Man 2, all right, it was in 3D, and it was so bad that I literally just took off my 3D glasses and I couldn't take it anymore. Like, I'd rather have impaired vision during the film so I didn't have to see what was on the screen.
I'm not gonna lie, I don't think me and Umar have even seen it. That's how bad it is. Like, we knew it was bad from the trailer.
You missed nothing. So, if anything, you saved yourself a waste of time. The Wasp was good, though. Like, she was a good character, but otherwise, it was just garbage.
Speaking of the MCU movies, what do you guys think about Black Widow coming up?
No comment right now. It's
we can't talk about stuff we haven't seen yet. We can't.
There's something to be said about movies that have such a long production marketing cycle, especially because of the situation that we're in right now, that you just kind of lose hype. It's been like so long now we've been seeing, talking about it. It's like, whatever. It's going to drop on Disney Plus probably, and then we'll just watch it. Whatever. I'm probably not going to be going to theaters to watch it.
You know two really good animated movies? Megamind and Surf's Up. Surf's Up might be Lord of the Rings level. We're talking like...
I'm surprised you're bringing up Surf's Up, but we out of all franchises, nobody mentioned the Toy Story franchise, which I always felt was like very impeccable. Like, the four movies are really good. Like, from beginning to end, you're not getting a bad movie. You're just only getting good movies after good movie. And some are masterpieces. I think Toy Story 1 and Toy Story 3 are masterpieces. And Toy Story 2 and Toy Story 4 are both great movies. So, I'm surprised no one ever mentioned that either. Samir's favorite movie, Bug's Life, you didn't mention it.
Not a franchise, do you?
Wait, what did I just say? I said Bug's Life. That's part of the Pixar franchise, I would say. Pixar is a franchise. The question is, what is your favorite franchise? As you saw from our panel today, all of us have different choices. We all have kind of different tastes. Even though we all grew up together, so obviously there's a lot of similarities. Like, we all kind of were jointly praising Lord of the Rings, but we all had different tastes at the end of the day. You know, Harry Potter, Star Wars, we had different opinions on the Dark Knight trilogy, Spider-Man, DCEU, MCU, and we also gave you kind of a flavor of the worst movies in our repertoire as well. Let us know in the comments what you think and join the debate.
Ben Affleck is back, guys. What's up, guys? It's the Faruqi Brothers, and today we're going fast because Ben Affleck is coming back as Batman Bruce Wayne in The Flash, in Andy Muschietti's The Flash. So, listen, this just happened like a second ago, so we're going to be reacting live, giving our quick thoughts, and I'm going to kick us off. So, honestly, I saw it. I was like, the first time I saw someone post a headline, I was like, oh, this has to be an old article back in the day. You know, what is this, Batman back in The Flash? Clicked it. It was today at a pinch me moment. I'm like, okay, this is happening. We're getting Batman back, and it's gonna be pretty sick. So, honestly, not much more than you said that. This is one of the coolest news of the day. So, Ziam, you're the Batman guy. What did you think when you heard that Ben Affleck is coming back?
Listen, obviously, it's insane. I mean, this is what we've been wanting as fans of Snyder's work, fans of what the Batman he created, and Ben Affleck taking this character to a completely different place that we haven't even seen from other actors. Like, as far as his Batman goes, he's the best Batman we've ever seen in live action. So just to see him again in a new project, I know the Snyder Cut's coming out and there's a lot of him we haven't seen there, but just see that he's involved in the future of Batman, the future of the DC films, it is so insane to see. I mean, there's nothing more you could want. We've loved this Batman from the beginning, even though so many people are against, so many people hated him. But he provided such a great performance, such a visceral performance for Batman. And just to see him probably grasp it again, I know you said, like Andy Muschietti said, that it's going to be a very emotional, very a powerful scene that he's involved in. So just to see him reclaim that role and be part of something like that again is just going to be completely insane, and I cannot wait for it.
Homer, give me your thoughts, man. Because we've all been saying we want it to happen. As always, like, when the Snyder Cut came out, you felt like, listen, this is the first domino. Things can start getting back to how it was. And Flashpoint was always a place where we were seeing for so many podcasts now where if you're going to put Ben Affleck somewhere, you put him here, right? And then after the Keaton news came out, we thought, okay, they're not going to use Ben Affleck. We kind of started letting that ship go. And then, boom, this news hits and Ben Affleck's back. What do you think?
I think that's the best part about it is that no one expected it. Like, no one was really expecting to hear an announcement that Ben Affleck's going to return. And that makes it, for fans, that makes it more sweeter because when you have, you know, when you want something and you kind of have, like, that boat has sailed and, you know you can't have it. But then for something out of left field to come and, you know, for it to be confirmed that we're actually going to get Ben Affleck. And because it just happened, it hasn't kind of hit us yet. But I'm sure, like, in the days to come, DC fandom is going to come. I really thought, okay, you know what? Snyder Cut's going to be the last time we see him. It'll be nice. We'll see him in his full glory. But now we're going to get the Snyder Cut. We're going to see him in the Snyder Cut. And then we're going to see him in this one. So I think one really good thing to look forward to is that Andy Muschietti's quote about how it is going to be a very emotional kind of, it's going to be coming from an emotional angle. I think that's sick. And I think that goes hand in hand with what we've already seen from him. And I think this is one of those Batmans that honestly, the impact that he's had on people, when you compare him to like other Batmans, I'm sure other Batmans have had an impact as well. Of course, in our circles, like fans that we've interacted with, like this Batman means a lot to people. There's already people that I'm thinking of on Twitter that I know that are probably, when they see it, if they haven't seen it already, they're probably going to lose their mind. So I think it's all around, it's just good to be a fan of DC right now. I mean, everything is kind of coming together. So
I'm just going to read off really quickly what Andy Muschietti, the director of Flash, said about Ben Affleck returning. Right? So Umar and we've all been hinting at this quote, but it's a very strong quote. He, Ben Affleck, is a very substantial part of the emotional impact in this movie. The interaction and relationship between Barry and Affleck's Wayne will bring an emotional level that we haven't seen before. It's Barry's movie, it's Barry's story, but their characters are more related than we think. They both lost their mothers to murder, and that's one of the most emotional vessels of the movie. That's where the Affleck Batman will kick in. I'm glad to be collaborating with someone who's been on both sides of the camera. He understands, right? So right away you get that Andy Muschietti wanted this to happen. I'm sure it's been in the works for a while now to close this deal. So Samir, we're talking about a lot of Batman who are going to be in this movie, right? We got Keaton, we got Affleck, a lot of stuff happening. So what do you think about this kind of variation of Flashpoint we're getting? And what's your reaction to Ben Affleck coming back?
It's pretty sick to finally get some more news on the Flash movie. It's going to be crazy to see two live-action Batman in this movie, like both Ben Affleck and Keaton. I don't think they'll interact, of course, but it'll be crazy to see them both on screen.
Yeah, I think if we look at the Flashpoint model, I think it'd be safe to say that in the beginning of this movie, it's going to be Ben Affleck with Ezra Miller. I don't know if he's going to have a small role in the beginning where he's talking to Barry, or in the end, he's going to receive the letter or whatever the case might be. I don't know how they're going to do it, but we know that whatever Flash does to the timeline,
that's freaking wild.
Yeah, he's going to end up seeing Keaton. Yeah, so whatever happens, he's going to see Ben Affleck. He's going to destroy the timeline because he wants to save his mom, and he's going to see Michael Keaton's Batman, right? And then whatever happens in the story, we don't know if Jeffrey Dean Morgan, that's still up in the air. A lot of people push that away. But I think when Affleck is coming back, we got to keep an eye on Jeffrey Dean Morgan also returning as Flashpoint Batman.
You know what I also wonder? Like, since there's so many Batman, which one are they going to end on? Which timeline that he creates is the Batman of
the Pattinson new Batman?
We'll see who's going to
be. Imagine Pattinson comes in the end.
Yeah, he pulls up at the end.
Remember, this movie's coming out after The Batman. It's going to come out in 2022, right? So if everything kind of stays on schedule. So a lot of things can happen. This could be probably the biggest movie DC releases in years. Like, this is like their Avengers if they play it right, with the amount of star power, with the amount of stuff happening. But let's just say for the four of us, because we've been talking Ben Affleck for so long, and it's funny because even since the beginning of our podcast started in 2017, every time we talked about Affleck, it was almost like, yeah, it's the end of the line. Like, he's not coming back. Then Matt Reeves was like, oh, is he going to use him or not? And that was always the conversation. And when they announced that Matt Reeves is using Robert Pattinson, we're like, oh, the book is closed. But the Snyder Cut comes out, we're like, oh, we're going to see him in the Snyder Cut. You might see him in Justice League 2 if things work out the way we all hope. And then we finally get this, which means that Affleck, it dispels the notion. A lot of people said, oh, yeah, don't ask Affleck to come back because he doesn't want to come back. Well, the reason he didn't want to come back was because of what was going on in Justice League, because of Joss Whedon, because of the
Justice League. It's about to get exposed.
Yeah.
Which is about to get exposed.
And we'll get to that. We'll give Ray Fisher his due another time. But that's a big part of it. What was going on behind the scenes with Joss Whedon, with Jeff Johns, when Zach left the project. And that made Affleck leave. Now things are getting better. Things are healing. Affleck wants to come back. So it's a very cool time. Like Umar said, a great time to be a fan. And
welcome to DC fandom. And the Faruqi brothers will be covering it all day. Let's kick us off with the first four big things that have happened. And we'll start with Wonder Woman 1984. So obviously they wanted to kick off with a big movie, and this is their biggest movie. Got delayed a few times, of course, but hopefully it's coming out this year. So basically we saw, you know, Gal Gadot, Patty Jenkins, we saw Linda Carter, a lot of people, Pedro Pascal, and they showed off the second main trailer. I think it's second or third, right? So second, I think they called it.
Second.
The second trailer of Wonder Woman 1984. And I'll start and give my quick thoughts right away. And I think that, you know, I kind of like the first trailer better. But, you know, one thing about Wonder Woman is that, you know Patty Jenkins is going to kill it when the movie comes out. I think at this point, this movie, since it got delayed so many times, it feels like, you know, we've already kind of passed the bridge, even though we never crossed it. Because everyone was hyped for it to come out last June. Not last June, yeah, this previous June that just passed right now. And now it's always getting delayed more and more. So even this trailer, in my head, I'm like, this movie should have already been seen almost. So I don't know if that kills the hype, but it's one of those weird things that it's hard to explain. But overall, I'm excited for the movie. I think this trailer was not as great as the first one because I like the more dramatic trailer over the comedic ones. But I did think Cheetah's real reveal was interesting. What do you guys think? Anyone can go.
I agree. I mean, the tone of this one's a little more lighter, but I don't think that will actually be a big I don't think that will be a hindrance to the film, really, because it is set in that 80s vibe, 80s theme type of aesthetic that Patty's trying to create for this film. And I think that really lends well into the lighthearted nature of Wonder Woman, at least the one that's the way they're trying to show her. But I don't think that will mean there won't be deep scenes or more in-depth look at Wonder Woman as a character and really breaking her down and her story. I mean, Maxwell Lord, let's see how he does. There wasn't really a lot of him in the trailer. I mean, he did narrate some things, but this was more focused on, I guess, Cheetah's reveal, which I think the design was pretty good. It wasn't like people worried it's going to look like cats or something like that, but I think they did a pretty good job with keeping it realistic, but also giving that comic book vibe. So overall, I think the trailer looks pretty good. Yeah.
Umar, you've been hyping it up for a while, so how's your hype gone up or down since, like, you know, the first teaser reveal?
Like you said, it feels like a bridge that we've already crossed, but we didn't, so... you know, I think the fans are getting kind of tired. We want to just see the movie. So, but I'm excited. The cheetah reveal was nice. I like the fact that they went kind of, you know, they went fully into it basically. Like they didn't really pull their punches. And I think, I'm excited to see like what kind of crazy stuff they're going to do. Just cause like they're showing things like Wonder Woman swinging off lightning in the last one. And this one, she's swinging off clouds or something weird. Like, so I'm excited to see, like, basically what type of new powers that we're going to see her do her thing.
Yeah. And, you know, at one point you got to say that, are we seeing too much? Or, first of all, we got to stop right there. Swinging on clouds, Umar.
It was the same shot. It was the same lightning shot.
Yeah, it was the same. I think there was a point that she was flying.
In the beginning of the trailer, she was swinging on a cloud. There was no lightning.
Yeah,
like, there was no lightning. She threw her lasso into the air.
Yeah. You think she was flying? Yeah, meaning she's...
He flew off the ground.
We're going to keep on saying, I'm going to say for my audience, this is what happens when Sean's going to think they're smart. We don't think what they're saying.
What are you talking about?
I'm saying just hearing you saying one of them was swinging on a cloud, I thought it was
It's because Sean is so emo, he wants to see her swing off lightning, it's dark, it's okay, swing off clouds, who cares?
So, Umar, is it still better than Aquaman 2? Or, yeah,
that was your big thing.
I mean, it's better than Aquaman. Yeah.
he said the poster was better than Aquaman.
Yeah, he said Aquaman. It's like something that happened.
Let's see. I'm excited for it, just like I was for Aquaman. So.
Right. And Samir, do you think at one point you're seeing too much of the movie, or do you think that they're still keeping some of their best stuff off the trailers?
I don't think we're seeing too much of the movie. We've only seen two trailers so far. Like Zion said, we haven't heard from, we haven't seen much of that character. I forget the character.
Maxwell Lord.
Yeah, right.
Well, we'll see. I think at this point, you know, the last point I'll make is that, do you think, and anyone can answer, this is an open question, do you think that this movie has to come out in theaters, or if it doesn't come out by the end of December, just throw it on HBO Max? Anyone can go.
Business wise, they gotta
wait it out.
You gotta wait.
I mean, theaters are open here, so just put it on theaters.
We'll watch it. They could do an international release and do like a Mulan thing, like for US, just, or at least make it available on streaming for an upcharge. That's it. Like it's not that bad of an idea, because there's already so many other films coming next year. You don't want it to be, you know, fall under the rug from those.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would be smart if they just released it by streaming.
All right. So from there, let's transition to the second event that followed pretty much right after Wonder Woman. And that was the new video game reveal for WB Montreal. So we discussed this briefly in our Suicide Squad video game podcast a couple of days ago, but for this game, you know, again, it's been teased so much. There's been a lot of cryptic teas going on, but now we finally saw a full-fledged trailer. We saw a gameplay footage. So I'll give my thoughts first. I thought it was interesting that you kind of were taking place after Arkham Knight. That's what it seems like, because right away, it's, you know, Bruce Wayne is saying, you know, this is play this after I die. And then he's talking to, obviously, Robin, Nightwing, and Batgirl, and Jason Todd, right? The Red Hood. So, really, right away, you know, when you look at the gameplay, I thought it was interesting. You know, I'm not sold on it, you know. I thought it looks a little like, maybe it's because of the stream, the nature of the stream, but it doesn't look as smooth as, let's say, Arkham Knight was on PS4. And I don't know if they're showing next gen on this. Was this like PS4, Xbox? I don't know if they're showing, or PS5, but I don't know. I got to see a little more of it. I thought that the premise is interesting because you get to use everyone else, but let's see how it goes. What do you think, Zan?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with most of your points. Like, story-wise, they showed Bruce Wayne who's dead, which is what happens in the end of Arkham Knight. But then you see Barbara Gordon, who's walking in Batgirl again, even though she was in a wheelchair in Arkham Knight. So, you know, it could be in some alternate timeline where it followed some semblance of events where Bruce Wayne is no longer there. Or it could just be a fake out as well, that Bruce Wayne has just been captured, or Corvallis has him, or they could play any angles. I feel like they were drawing on that to give some kind of connectivity to the previous Arkham games or the Arkhamverse, but it doesn't seem as clear anymore if it's really part of that. And as far as the gameplay, I think it looked pretty cool, honestly, just being able to use those four characters. There's theories whether that Robin is actually Tim Drake or Damian Wayne, because he has the look of Damian Wayne, he has the mask, and Tim Drake in the series wore a hood, so let's see how that's gonna go. But as far as the gameplay, I attribute that more to the stream, that it didn't look smooth. I feel like when it actually comes out, the final finished product should be as smooth as all the other ones have been.
Omar, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that we haven't really seen it fully finished. It didn't feel like a finished game. Like, it felt, you know,
They did say pre-alpha.
So yeah, right. So I'm more interested in seeing the end product. But as for the concept that we saw, which is basically what the game will be, I think the storyline is cool. I want to see more. Like, I mean, we just saw, it's just the first kind of tease. But yeah, for me, I think the gameplay is good, but I just want to see more. And I want to see the finished product.
Yeah. And clearly, Samir, you know, what we saw is that Court of Owls are going to be the main villain. I mean, we knew that for a while, but do you think, because the game is still called Batman Gotham Knight, right? Gotham Knights, but there's no Batman in the trailer. Do you think they're going to pull something where we're going to use Batman in the game? Or do you think, what do you think Batman's role is going to be?
I don't know. I think they're going to bring Batman back. You know, we got that one shot of, like, I don't know, there's like a bunch of frozen, like, caskets, sort of, but they were like hanging sideways in the Court of Owls. That was pretty interesting. Maybe they'll do something like that to bring him back, but I guess we'll see. Court of Owls looks really nice. Yeah,
And in my opinion, it'd be kind of cool if Court of Owls are bringing Bruce Wayne back himself as the main villain. So when the four Gotham Knights, they're going to be seeing Batman as the main boss. That'd be kind of cool. Like, oh, Batman right there. Right? So that's what I think. So let's transition out of that back to movies again. The Flash had a pretty big panel where Andy Muschietti, the director, talked about kind of his vision. We saw concept art. We saw Flash's new costume. We saw Michael Keaton standing next to him. There's a lot going on with that movie, especially with the multiverse. And we just recorded a couple of days ago about how Ben Affleck is coming back. So just, we'll be quick up with this one. Like, your basic impressions of, you know, where this movie is going. And Umar, you can start first. Like, what did you think about that panel? And what do you think about the trajectory of this movie? I mean, it seems like it's getting bigger and bigger with more hear about it.
Well, I mean, we have Keaton in it. We have Ben Affleck in it. You have Flash. Now we have confirmed that he's going to have a new suit. And I think Keaton makes it basically because the concept art kind of shows that. So it's a movie. It's an event film. It feels like what Justice League would have been. Like Flashpoint's an event film. It's not really just a solo. But then when you hear what the writers were saying and the people that were talking about, like Ezra Miller and how he's going to portray the Flash, it also seems like at the heart of it, it is going to be, there's going to be a big, big emphasis on Flash and his trauma as a child and what he's going to go through. Obviously, Flashpoint is based on that as well. So I'm very interested to see Flashpoint, but it's going to be done in a different way because they have two Batmans and they're Bruce. So it's not like Jeffrey Dean Morgan's playing Thomas and the story that most of us know. So it's just a new idea. It's a fresh idea. And I'm excited to see Ezra Miller basically back and in the suit.
Yeah, I agree. And you know how Ezra talked about and the directors and all the producers talked about, this really does break open this whole idea of the multiverse. And now it's like pretty much confirmed that they're really bringing everything together. All the iterations, Christopher Reeve, Linda Carter, Michael Keaton, everybody, Adam West, they're all now part of this larger multiverse. And that really does open the doors for as many, anything as possible, really. And with Michael Keaton coming, I'm assuming now he is the Batman from his world, from the Tim Burton verse. So just seeing how that all comes together and how it opens doors for the future, really. And, you know, this Flash movie, once you break through that, this is the first hurdle. So once you get through this one, then they really have so much they can work with and they can use within future projects.
Yeah, it's right. Really shaping up to be like a really hype movie. Going back to the suit, I feel like it looks a lot like the Injustice suit, like, so far. We only saw like a basic silhouette of it, but that's what it looks like. But I hope they don't like downgrade the material of the suit. I like the plated Snyder version of the suit, but I hope they don't like combine the CW version and the DC version to make it.
Same. For me, I think in a story sense, like, imagine when he's going to save his mom, his whole suit rips apart. So when he lands in Michael Keaton's Batcave, he's like completely destroyed suit, so he can't wear it. And then Keaton will be like, yo, let me fix you up or something, you know? And that'd be a cool scene. And he makes him the new suit. And then they go on whatever adventure that they've cooked up for him, because there are obviously a lot of people are pushing the script. You know, according to Vanity Fair, Ben Affleck actually wrote pieces of the script. Like, he told Christina Hudson, who wrote the main script, that here's my notes back, that why don't you make these changes and I'll accept. So she added in whatever Ben Affleck wanted her to put into the script. So I'm very interested in what he put in. Maybe he had some input on his own dialogue on how Bruce is going to talk to him. So it's going to be very cool to see how that movie shaped up. But for me, like, it's Snyder Cut, Matt Reeves the Batman, and then Flash. Like, these are the three projects that I feel like are going to be shaping up the future of DC. You know, I'm very excited for it.
Even story-wise, I mean, it makes sense, because if the story takes place concurrently in 2020, then jumping back to 89 would make sense that Barry's a kid at that time, and the 89 Batman is Michael Keaton. So just even that real-life kind of connectivity to it just gives it a whole nother level of...
That's a good point, yeah. So we're all sad for Flash. So then right after Flash, this is like heels on that panel. We started the panel for the Suicide Squad. So obviously, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, regardless of what you think about James Gunn or think about the Guardians of the Galaxy films, whatever the case might be, he is the new showrunner for the Suicide Squad franchise going forward. Of course, we all want the air cut to come out, but we'll hear about that later, I'm sure. But for this movie, talking about what this movie, this vision, this director, what are we thinking? I'll go first, actually. I gotta be honest, I'm not the most hyped for this movie. Nothing's like screaming to me. Particularly, I know they're going to really dive into the suicide aspect of Suicide Squad, meaning this is a big cast, but expect more than half to die. Like, I don't think very few are going to be surviving the end of the movie. That's why they purposely picked very unknown characters. So when they die, it's like, all right, like, you know, Harley Quinn's not going to die, you know, but, and Amanda Waller's probably not going to die, but everyone else is on the table, you know, to probably get killed. So it'll be interesting how it happens, but overall, I'm not sure what the movie's exactly going to be, but it's okay, you know, like, I'll be interested to see what more comes out of it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel like they bumped it up with big names just to play on that fact that they're very, you know, unknown characters to the public. And even to most comic book readers, if you really don't pay attention to Suicide Squad comp, the runs, these are relatively unknown characters. So I feel like that's all just part of the marketing play to it. Just have fun with the movie. And yeah, like you said, I mean, you really, outside of the core characters, you don't expect to see some of these other characters in future Suicide Squad films. That's what I think too.
I think James Gunn is going to deliver a good film. I think the problem is, like, you have one event where you have, again, like Charles was saying, you have the Batman, you have Snyder Cut stuff that's going to come. Like, you have stuff that's, like, top tier. And when you have one event with all those things, you have things that will seem just mid. Just because you have the top of the top, and then you have stuff that, like, you know what I mean? Like, so I think James Gunn's going to give us a good movie. But I don't think it's going to be obviously on level with some of the bigger movies, and it's not meant to be. Like, I don't think that's what they're going for anyway. So I think the behind the scenes look is exciting, just because you know that James Gunn will probably deliver on the action, the action sequences, and the way they showed the behind the scenes, I think the focus for them is the action sequences. So I think we'll get a fun movie. We'll watch it and we'll forget it, like the MCU film.
Yeah, the character list was kind of iffy, but after seeing the behind the scenes and James Gunn repeatedly saying that it's the biggest movie he's ever made, it's the best cast he's ever worked with, I think the movie will be all right. And I hope Idris Elba doesn't die.
I would probably say he will, but the one thing I think that I'm most impressed by this movie, like, it was one positive, and I was more negative of the group today, but for the one thing I'm positive about is that they said they're using more practical than any other movie he's done on. So practical sets mean they actually were on set shooting, physical, less CGI. And I think the less CGI sometimes does work for a movie. I know things like The Batman are going to be using less CGI as well. So that'll be interesting to see how you make use of that physical set. And obviously, yeah, we'll see next year how that movie comes out, because 2021 is shaping up to be a huge year for DC with the amount of heat that's coming.
Bro, the final shot.
That's it. That's beautiful. That is beautiful. The Snyder Cut, man.
This guy's probably fought hundreds of thousands of other super beings on the other planets he's destroyed, right? And we have to assume he's won.
I don't care how many demons he's fought and how many hells. He's never fought us. Not us united.
That's how you know he's a leader.
That's it, boys.
Unhinged Batman.
What can we say? It's the Faruqi brothers. We just saw Zack Snyder's Justice League official trailer. And I gotta say, it was a thing of beauty, and I was getting goosebumps through it. Let me just say that, because everyone, this is something that's like, it's not like, oh yeah, because company gives movie to fan consumes. This is the fans for three straight years were asking for this, right? We know, you've been listening to our podcast for close to 3 years now. We've been asking from it since literally podcast number one, and get the director's cut out there. And now we're here 3 years later, and that's the trailer. We just saw it. Man,
I mean,
where do we start?
Just like, the song fits so perfectly with the trailer. I mean, like, this is just, it's like hard to even comprehend. Like, this is it. Like, it's finally being realized. And it's just, it's hard to put into words, really. It's just so cool to see everything, and the way it's all put together is just, this is the dream film. This is the dream film for any DC fan. You can't look at these characters in this trailer and, like you said, not feel goosebumps. Like, this is it. The fans and everybody who's wanted this has been working so hard. Every dollar donated, every hashtag sent, this is all working towards this. And now it's finally here, finally being realized. And it's just so insane to see.
You can tell it's a window back into the post Batman v Superman universe. It has a lot of heart. It has a lot of, like, you can just tell it's that universe. Like, you finally get a glimpse back, and 3 years later, you get a glimpse back into the initial like universe that Zach was making. So it's cool to see it. And obviously there's some surprises in just in this one alone, even though a lot of it is stuff that he's already put out in terms of pictures. But the Ray Fisher stuff, like, man, just that one shot of Ray Fisher, you already know his performance is going to be something.
Yeah, you saw him, like, he's, like, crying, tears are coming down his face, while obviously you see his father is sacrificing himself right there. What a trailer. I think this was by far the best trailer we've seen. I think, honestly, I'm not – prisoner of the moment or whatever the case might be. This is one of the best trailers we've seen in years, I think. Since like the BVS trailers of back in the day. I mean, this is a beautifully cut trailer. The song went perfectly. The song actually kind of fit what was going on because that feeling like Hallelujah is kind of like you're letting kind of like a sigh of relief almost like it's done, you know, like the job is done. So it's kind of like the fans, that's the fan perspective of it. And honestly, for the four of us, because of how much time and effort goes in from a fan perspective, we've been seeing it, we've been doing it. You can't help but feel like emotional when you're watching it. It's just like a big moment, you know, that you feel happy for Zach, you feel happy for everyone, but this kind of takes you back to that May 20th feeling when they first announced the Snyder Cut is coming out. So absolutely beautiful trailer. Let's talk about Black Suit Superman, Samir. What are you thinking? You saw a few shots of Superman. You saw that ending shot, that beautiful shot of the whole Justice League sitting together. What are you thinking?
Black Suit looks really nice. You know, the trailer as a whole is pretty good.
Yeah, I think we're seeing kind of the actual film style that Zach wants to show when it comes to that aspect ratio, because that's the actual film reel, right? If you shoot on film, the actual film reel comes like that, right? And then when you're shooting, when you're editing, you always zoom in, right? But you're getting kind of the IMAX feel. If you see, you guys been to the IMAX 70mm screen here in New York City. We saw Avengers there. We saw a few movies there. But where the screen gets so big that you can see the entire shot, that's what this kind of shot movie is for. So I think, you know, honestly, again, this is like a—it's a crazy experience. I gotta say, it's a crazy experience. Omar, what do you think?
Can watch. Hopefully, this comes out. Hopefully, limited theatrical release or something happens. Or I'm sure fans will do screenings throughout the United States anyway. So, we could probably, hopefully, we get a chance to get them that experience as well.
Yeah, and Zach, obviously, we've all been saying it. We've known it for a while, but now Zach said it. This thing will be in chapters, four parts. So it's like a limited series, 1 hour each. What are you thinking about that, Zion? Now that we finally knew it, we knew for a while, but not confirmed it.
I think, honestly, that'll only help build the hype. I mean, you know, we all watch shows, we watch animes, all these things where when it's broken down, after you finish one episode, you're only that much more excited to see the next one and then talk about what's going to happen, what's going to happen next, or what kind of theories you have. And releasing in this format, it's something completely new for a film. And, I mean, it's just like you're breaking down a whole new avenue of showing a film, releasing a film, and to release it in this episodic format will just help build the hype around it even more and make it that much more fun to consume for the fans.
Right. And honestly, guys, what can we more say? I think half of us are speechless right now. I've watched the show. Probably watch it a few hundred more times. And then we'll do more analysis, of course, down the road.
You're part of this too. My part of it. You'll see.
What's up, guys? Fruki Bros here. Shrazian, Umar, and myself, Samir. DC Fandom is just finished wrapping up, and at the end, we got a huge surprise with the first look, the first trailer of the Batman, of Matt Reeves' The Batman. So I'll start us off, I guess. You know, what is there to say? It was incredible. It's hard to believe that only a quarter of the movie has been filmed so far. The writing was incredible. All the Riddler's speech. And the shots were crazy. Zion, since you are the resident Batman fan, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you thought?
Listen, I completely agree. I mean, I was floored by the trailer. This is like everything I could have hoped for and expected. Matt Reeves delivered on. So, I mean, everything from the score, it was like haunting and it was like beautifully done. The look of Gotham City, it looks brand new, something we haven't seen. Something more original, like closer to Tim Burton movies and not based off a real city like Christopher Nolan did. So I like that as well. And of course, just the aesthetic and the look of it, it's so gritty, so dark. And I feel like the mutedness and the very black and white colors of it really play perfectly into this Batman and this like murder mystery story that's going on in this film. And I think just everything from his voice, I think his voice was really great. His costume obviously amazing on film. When he's standing next to Gordon in like the in the crime scene, it just looks so perfect. And you know, I honestly can say that I didn't see a single flaw from this. This was literally just anything I could have imagined. Matt Reeves did, and he put it in such a perfect way in this teaser. And this could be the greatest Batman film of all time. I mean, it's shaping up to be something super special, and this teaser just really pushed that forward.
I think the Riddler was the crown jewel. Even though we did see a lot of Batman, I think the Riddler just got a taste of like what his role is going to be, and I think he's going to challenge. I think he's going to get into the top five, man. Like I maybe just like Strahs and Snyder Cup prisoner of the moment, but yo, man, from the looks of it, like it looks like he's. I mean, he murked the politician. That's the first kind of thing. No more lies, right? So I think this movie is going to have like the best balance of we're going to have like, okay, we're going to have a political thriller on our hands. Like we're going to have politics. We're going to have Gotham City. They're going to talk about corruption, all that stuff. And all at the same time, we're going to have a psychological battle that Bruce is going to face where, again, like Matt, you said that he's in that mode where he's figuring himself out. Like what? And he's going to fail. That he's going to have moments where he's going to fail. And, I mean, he killed somebody in the first trailer.
He brutalized that person. Yeah, either they're going to be forever hospitalized or they're dead. I mean, I'm pretty sure they're going to do the no-kill route, unless that's part of his arc. We'll see, I mean, how that goes. But
they killed him, bro. He killed him. I don't care what anyone says. He killed him, bro.
It could be like the Arkham games where he, like, breaks their bones, leaves them near death. But, you know, like, leaving them alive in a paralyzed state is better than just killing them.
I mean, we saw that this movie is incredibly dark, and this Batman is ruthless. Charlie, you gonna
he definitely is.
No mercy, fam. No mercy. Shraw, do you wanna tell us your thoughts real quick?
Yeah, you know, I think it's one of the coolest trailers. Again, I think it feels like a Hall H moment, like old school San Diego Comic Con, where big trailers are revealed. But today we got through DC fandom. I think the one thing I think about is how big of a success DC fandom in general is from its first year, where we got both the Snyder Cut and the Batman. But for the trailer itself, honestly, you know, just everything about it, we already knew it was going to be a noir movie, but actually seeing the aesthetic, how dark it is, and then seeing Ben, I think Robert Pattinson's voice is great, honestly. It's the first time we're hearing him talk as Batman. I really like it. But overall, I think the combination of an extremely dark, psychopathic villain like Riddler, because Riddler's not a physical villain, he's not someone that Batman's going to go blow to blow with, he's someone who's going to intellectually mess up with Batman. So it's going to be very interesting to see. This is a year two Batman, like Matt Reeves said. So it's going to be a lot of fun to see how this movie plays out. Like Samir said, the fact that only 25% of the movie was shot and we saw a trailer this is good shows that Matt Reeves is, you know, a top-tier director, top-tier writer. So I'm very excited to see where they go with this. But overall, it's 10 out of 10 stars for me.
We want to, you know, talk about Chadwick Boseman. You know, and sadly, you know, he passed away a couple of days ago due to a four-year battle with colon cancer. And we wanted to, you know, take a couple of days to, in respect of him and his family, to not record anything, not, you know, jump any gun with talking about it. But now we feel like for a couple of days, we can talk about, you know, the life and legacy of Chadwick Boseman. And, you know, I'll start us off and I'll say that some people, you know, they leave their mark on, like, society in a courageous way. And I feel like Chadwick is one of these people. Because through his work, you know, and this is crazy when you think about people who fight through what kind of adversity they're fighting through. This is a guy who pretty much right around the time of Civil War, when he was really kicking up his career, he obviously had the disease and he knew it. And he didn't tell anyone, maybe he told his family members, stuff like that, but the public didn't know. And he went through so many movies, so many iconic roles, right? Like Black Panther, Jackie Robinson, he played a lot of people, right? So it's crazy that he kind of did all that without showing so much strength, you know, and that thing that I think like anyone can take inspiration from when they look at this guy's life. I think even bigger than that though, is the impact that he's had on other people. So, you know, just looking at all the people he's fought for, among people he's campaigned for, he was a big advocate of social justice, fighting for different, all types of minorities and underserved communities. That's something he always believed in. So, and especially his impact on the Black community cannot be understated. So I feel like when you talk about him, you got to talk about that legacy because he left a legacy, you know, and a lot of people are going to be forever, you know, inspired by his performance, specifically in Black Panther, which so many people in the world saw and immediately fell in love with. So definitely, you know, thoughts and prayers go to, you know, his family who are probably going through a lot right now. And hey, it's one of those things that life is short and it's unpredictable. So you just got to make the best of every single moment you have. And that's one thing that we definitely been thinking about. Umar, what do you think?
So like you said, it's tough. It's a tough thing to hear about. I think the hardest thing for us is like when you see these people as your heroes and you know they're actors and stuff, but your connection to them is their heroes, especially in our fan base. You never really think that these type of people will even pass away. Like, it doesn't actually cross your mind that there's a day that will come that people like Kobe Bryant and people like Chadwick Boseman are going to pass away. You know, like, yeah, intellectually, you know they're going to pass away, but when it happens, it slaps you. And it makes you think about, like, it just makes you think about how fragile this life actually is. And I've been thinking of, like, something positive to say, like when it comes to this topic, but it's kind of hard. I think the one positive thing, which a lot of people have already talked about, is the fact that he was able to fight this war that he was fighting and do it with like class. Didn't tell anyone. Not that telling people is an issue, but you know, different people have different ways of handling stuff. And he gave us Black Panther, Infinity War, Avengers Endgame. There's so many other movies that he did outside of the superhero genre that are amazing. And then the work that he actually did in that time, specifically when it came to cancer and different things that he was working on. There's a picture with him standing with Imam Omar Suleiman, and they're talking about the social justice movements that are out there. So you can tell the guy had his hands in a lot of things, and he was amazing at whatever he was touching, he was amazing at. Obviously our hearts grieve as well with the family that's actually lost him, and we keep his family in our prayers. And the one thing I would tell anybody that's watching this video, anyone, is that it's a temporary life, so whatever you're going to do, do something.
So, yeah, I agree with both of your points, Umar and Shaz. I mean, it's obviously heartbreaking and shocking when we heard the news. And just to think that, you know, he's been fighting this for 4 years and not telling anybody, you know, it really is a testament to the type of person he was and the type of image you want to give of strength for his character and the characters he was playing. And really, you see all these videos with him as Black Panther and all these other characters played. He was such an inspirational actor to these kids, this new generation, was looking up to this hero of color, and it really inspires them and gives them strength. And, you know, he's just provided so much of that. And it is really sad. You obviously feel for his family and feel for those closest to him to see him pass in this way. And, you know, it really puts things into perspective because you don't know what someone else is fighting internally or privately. So you just gotta be respectful and be kind to everybody you meet. Everybody's going through their struggles, and Chadwick was obviously going through a very great struggle, but he didn't show it once. He stayed strong. He stayed confident through all of his performance, through all his roles with the media and everything. And that's just a testament to his strength and what kind of person he really was, and really what kind of strength you want to show to these kids and to this generation of how you can lead a life like this. And you don't have to let these things bring you down as a person or a struggle. Like, you can try, you can fight. You fight hard to make your life into what you want it to be and really be an inspiration to other people. And like Umar, you said, you know, you don't know, you know, this life's temporary. And like Shari said, you don't know how much time you really have. Nobody knows. So with the time you do have, you just got to try to be the best person you can be and really just do the best you can with this life.
You know, he used to talk about how he used to meet with cancer patients who were, you know, anticipating his movies. You know, he used to inspire them a lot. And to think that he was going through that is just insane, especially since we did the Black Panther Challenge. You know, we saw firsthand how he inspired, you know, so many children. It's it's just it's heartbreaking.
And yeah, you know, Samir, you mentioned the Black Panther challenge. I mean, you know, when we started comic book debate, everyone associates us with, oh, the Snyder Cut or Justice League or DC. We're mostly covering DC, but there's a reason the four of us chose Black Panther as our first charity event. We didn't choose it for just some random reason. We knew after our press screening that this was a movie that kids are going to go crazy for. And we were thinking about the children specifically in this one, children of color, specifically in the Black community. And when we picked out the middle school that we brought to see the film, we didn't watch the film with them. We were kind of watching the kids at that point and watching their reactions, and their eyes were glowing basically when it came, when Black Panther showed up on screen. They were cheering every single moment that Black Panther showed up again. When he says, you know, as you can see, you know, I'm not dead, and people were cheering in the crowd. These are kids, right? And after the movie, we told them that let's do the Wakanda Forever, right? I told them, let's do it. And then the way all the kids scream, right? You have the Wakanda Forever. Yeah! 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 The way the kids just elevated for Wakanda Forever, that doesn't happen out of nowhere. That happens because Chadwick put 100% of himself into that performance. And the fact that he was doing that with cancer shows how much strength he had doing it. So definitely, you know, this news hit us like a truck. Like we got on call as soon as it happened, and we were just quiet for like an hour. We didn't talk. Like we were on call together, but no one was talking. And we're just like, between Kobe Bryant, who we all admired so much, and now Chadwick, who we know inspired us, but also inspired so many people. We know how many people they inspired. You get like deflated. And then we know like the pandemic and the protests and everything that's going on for social justice. It's been a very trying year, a very exhausting year for everyone. But then we think about someone like Chadwick who fought through with cancer. Then for people like us, you know, you have that extra thing to listen. Like perseverance is a real quality, and he showed it. And people, same with Kobe, people showed it, you know. And I think we can all take something from that. And I think, you know, we tweeted this out on Comic Book Debate, but it's like, you know, the idea of an everlasting legacy, you know. Like Chadwick maybe passed away, but that movie, Black Panther, the effect that it had on the entire generation, they're going to grow up, and maybe one of those kids who watch this movie are going to create the next superhero, the next film, the next big thing. Maybe they'll be the next person who champions social justice. Maybe they'll be next person who will be president. We don't know what the kids who see these, where they get the inspirations from. So the fact that they had that experience with Chadwick goes a long way. And, you know, we debated whether we want to keep monetization off for this video or keep it on and donate. So I think we're going to be keeping monetization on. And then whatever comes out of here, we're going to be putting it towards the American Cancer Society. And we're going to be putting all the money there. So just to help out people who are in need and get some help they deserve. This is the Faruqi Brothers, guys. We'll see you next time. Peace out.